Hey everyone, it's Alexa.
And Catherine.
And we're the girls behind Tickets, Please. And on today's episode, we're talking about Titanic. So how long had it been since you've seen this?
It has to be over 15, maybe 20 years.
What? Oh my God, I can't believe, I forgot it was that long.
I did watch about 15 minutes of it.
I remember.
I think that was last year.
Yeah. That is so crazy because I have the opposite experience. I watch it every 6 months in full.
That is psychotic.
It's not exact. I don't like schedule it and think like it's been 6 months. I have to watch Titanic, but I've seen it many times over many years.
The period of time is not crazy, but the amount of times is crazy for how intense it is.
I find it weirdly comforting. I don't, it is intense, but I thought it seems like such a contained safe space, ironically, even though it's a horrific thing that's happening in the second half. It just feels so familiar that I like it. I don't remember the first time I saw it. I don't have a visceral experience of seeing it for the very first time. My biggest connotation with it is watching it one time with my friend who had never seen it. We were probably in seventh or eighth grade. And she cried for like 45 minutes after it was over. I remember thinking like, I don't know what to do. She literally has not stopped crying for 40 minutes.
I understand that reaction.
Me too.
I viscerally remember the first time I saw it.
It was in the theater.
Yes.
How many times did you see it in the theater?
Three.
I have already said this when we did our Best Picture episode because we were talking about me going to the movies. But when I saw it in the theater, it was like I was seeing it for the very first time.
That was recently, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first time you saw it, you said you were in seventh grade.
No, that wasn't the first time I saw it. I actually don't really remember when
I saw it. Oh, right. Okay. So you weren't at the right age to realize that Leo was the hottest thing that had ever happened.
Oh, no, I was. I can't imagine, though, watching it, realizing that when everybody else was realizing it. That must have been a unique experience. Because even though I had similar feelings of like, he is the hottest man on planet Earth, I'm in love with him, I want to be with him forever, I did feel that because I watched it at around the age that you should be. But to have that experience with everybody else going through Leomania, I don't know what that was like.
It was quite a time. I already knew that I was deeply in love with him before I saw this because I'd seen him in a couple other things. I told you this last year when I watched those few minutes of it, but I could not believe how many lines I knew before they said them. It was like I've been watching it every year. I don't know what that is. Meanwhile, I've seen The Departed four times and I can't even tell you what it's about. And I loved it every time. I think it's a great movie.
Well, some movies are just like that. They stick for some reason where you really, really remember it. I told you before we got on the recording, but I watched it with my mom this time. And we already quoted a lot just from, I don't think we've ever watched it together, but we quoted it all the time. And there were so many lines that she was saying right before they said, like innocuous lines too. Yeah. It would be like something random where like someone opens a door and, oh, like one that she did was when they're going to dinner and Cal's like,
well, it's amazing. You could almost pass for a gentleman.
She just said that line before. He says it for no reason at all.
One of the things I noticed this time, when they're showing us the first sweeping overhead shots of the ship, all the little people on there are CGI.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a video game.
They're like black and white, too. Some of them are not even in full color. But to be fair, though, I mean, given that it was from 97, I'm surprised it's held up as long and as well as it has.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wonder if there have been any updates.
Well, I think there was, because when I was doing research for like behind the scenes facts, one of the things that came up was that in one scene, like, the constellations were wrong, so they redid them in the 2012 remastering. So I think 2012 there was like a remastering that they re-released.
It's an interesting thing to correct. I guess that's cool.
I think Neil deGrasse Tyson pointed it out. So I guess when he points something out, you have to take note.
I was also very aware this time how I could tell the night scenes in the water were filmed in a tank.
Really?
It didn't feel like the ocean.
It's so funny you say that because I'm barely paying attention by that point. I've seen it so many times that when we get to that, I don't need to let that in every time I watch it. So I'm surface watching it by the time they're in the water on that piece of wood.
The amount of stuff we've watched for this podcast, and I've said this before, I just watch things differently now, and I'm not trying to. I notice things that I don't want to notice, actually. I want to see it how James intended us to see it.
Yeah. That's a bummer that it shattered the illusion for you. I've said this to you before, and I have this rule with a couple of movies. This is one of them. I don't like to see many behind the scenes photos. Like, all the research that I did was all articles that I was reading, because I don't want to see how this was made, because it ruins it. I, to this day, will not watch one thing about Lord of the Rings, because I refuse to shatter that illusion at all. I want it to feel as real as it does when I watch it.
That's very cute. I love that.
So I hate even seeing like articles that have a picture of James standing beside them. Like, I don't even want to see that. Like, the fact that he was there, like, I don't even want to know.
I thought it was so cute that his friend was speaking little bits of Italian through the whole thing. That's another thing I never, for some reason, picked up on before.
I didn't even pick that up now. One thing that I noticed was, this is so ridiculous that I'd never noticed, the end, right before she gets rescued, when she's singing, did not realize that that was the song that they were singing when they were at the front of the boat.
Kathy Bates is the fucking queen of my life. I was too young to care all the other times I saw it. She's the hero of this movie.
When she stands up at the end in that boat and it's like,
come on, girls, grab an oar, let's go.
Are you out of your mind? We're in the middle of the North Atlantic. Now, do you people want to live or do you want to die?
I don't understand a one of you. What's the matter with you? It's your men out there. There's plenty of room for more.
She's having a hero's climactic moment. It's iconic.
One thing I do disagree with is her as an old lady throwing the diamond into the water.
Totally agree. And I actually was going to ask you, why do you think she does that?
I think it's a tribute to Jack, a sense of closure or completing the circle, even still probably a little bit of a tiny bit of a fuck you to what's his name. But not really. I think it's mostly for Jack. This is how valuable you were to me. But still, please.
Yeah, it really is.
Throw the hair comb, throw the hand mirror, right, something else, please.
Don't need to throw. Oh, how many carats diamond did he say that it was?
56.
Oh my God. And what kills me is that the ship she's on and the exhibition that they're doing, it's not like they're going to take it and sell it for millions of dollars to somebody. Like, it's, you know, for research, it'll be in a museum somewhere. It's not going to be, someone's not going to sell it for $1 billion. Like, just give it to them.
Wait, you think that? I thought he was going to sell it.
Oh, you think it's for like money?
Not, you know, but
I thought it was for like research.
When you find treasure, it's yours.
I didn't know that. Really?
I mean, somebody should fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure it's true.
I thought it was like a historian team that was excavating like artifacts from the Titanic.
I need to know the answer to this. I'm pretty sure that's not it.
Are you telling me that Bill Paxton's character is in it for the money, not the science?
No, I think he's extremely passionate about the science as well.
He's in it for the money, not the science.
One of the things that makes me think that what I'm saying is true is when he says to her granddaughter,
3 years. I've thought of nothing except Titanic, but I never got it. I never let it in.
Oh shit, this article does call him a treasure hunter. Wow, I did not think that this whole time. I thought it was like this scientific team that was really into the Titanic and looking for well-known artifacts that they were going to put in like a museum.
That's so cute and pure.
Oh, well, then I'm kind of happy she throws it into the ocean.
When we see her for the first time, when she gets out of the car in that purple hat, I
die.
I've never seen anyone more beautiful.
When I saw it in the theater, it was in real D 3D. And I had not been to a 3D movie in 15 years. I was going when it was like the blue and red paper glasses they would give you. And this, it makes it look, I can't even describe it, but to see that shot in this 3D.
I don't see what all the fuss is about. It doesn't look any bigger than the Mauritania.
You could be blasé about some things, Rose, but not about Titanic.
They have the most amazing chemistry. It is so clear from the first second. And I don't think that has anything to do with either one of their acting. I think it's 100% real.
And I think that because they have such natural chemistry, it gives both of their characters such a nuance that is almost really unexplainable. Because one of my favorite things about it in its entirety is how when we're with them, I feel a sense of safety with Jack. He just is caring for her through the whole time. I feel he's got her. Whether he's making decisions, he's thinking fast, like he's always holding her hand.
He's screaming, come on, every
minute. Yes, he's making sure she's with him. He lifts her up. He's pulling her down. He has her. That is a subtle thing that there's no way that that was coming from a script. That was just from them building on screen chemistry together. He's so reassuring. He makes you think that they're really going to make it, honestly.
I was hoping the whole time it would be different. That's so silly. To say it really is, but I couldn't help it.
It's not silly because I was listening to another podcast break this movie down a couple of months ago, and I didn't re-listen to it purposely before we were doing this. But the only thing that they said that stuck with me is that they also feel when they watch it, they want it to be different. There is something magical about the movie where when you're watching, you're sitting there genuinely thinking, I hope it doesn't sink. I hope he doesn't die. Like that it's going to be different. It's delusional, but I really feel it every time I watch it. There are so many lines that stick with me that give me chills. And one of the ones is when older Rose says,
"That was the last time Titanic ever saw daylight."
Oh my God. And when at the point where she says it, there are so many more things that need to happen between them.
Yes.
But I was like, what do you mean? It's yes. Too soon.
Yes.
The scene where he's teaching her how to spit. Mm-hmm. I never realized that it comes back around when she spits in his face at the end. What is his name? Because I want to call him Billy Zane.
How?
How? What?
Cow. Can I? He has the best name.
Also, that he grabs that crying kid and pretends that it's his kid. I don't understand how there were so many lines that I remembered, but so many important plot pieces that I didn't.
That makes sense.
Entire shootout. That he's chasing them, shooting at them.
How could I had you no forget memory that? It's the most ridiculous part in the world. But wait, to go back to the spitting for a second, it's funny that you highlighted both of those moments because both of them were improvised.
Wait, what?
The scene where he's teaching her to spit was ad-libbed. They came up with that. The two of them.
No.
Yes. The scene where that was ad-libbed. And also when she spits in his face later. She improvised. She's supposed to jab him with a bobby pin or a hairpin that she's got in. Instead of doing that, she spit in his face.
I can't believe that.
Honestly, when I was reading, I was thinking how much of this really was James Cameron and how much was really just them thinking of stuff to add in.
What other stuff was improvised?
So this one is super hard to verify because I read some articles that say it was him and I read some articles that say it was James, the king of the world. Some articles say that Leo came up to say it and that James heard him say it and he was like, oh my God, I'm going to use it. But then I've also read an article that says either way it was found when they were doing it. It was in that moment. It wasn't written into the script. If it was Leo or if it was James, it was that moment that did it. Because another version that I've read is that he had like an earpiece in and James was giving him direction like from far away, and James said, say something like I'm the king of the world or something silly like that. It was not supposed to be so momentous as it ends up being, and you know, the line that everybody quotes from the movie. I want to believe it was him, Leo.
Wow.
I'm the king of the world!
And then the only other one that I have written down that was improvised, and this is my favorite one. This is one of my favorite moments of the entire movie. When they're at the back of the ship right before it's going into the water, and she looks up at him and says,
Jack, this is where we first met.
I have read from a couple of things that they came up with that. And I adore that moment because it's the only time, at least in my opinion, where Jack actually looks scared. The look on his face, he looks terrified. And then she says that and he kisses her forehead and he looks recentered and recalm. It's like my favorite moment in the whole thing. My other one is when she's on the life raft and the flares are going up behind and she looks up at Cal and Jack and decides to jump off. Every time I rewatch the movie, I rewatch that part like 5 or 6 times because I just love it. It's everything that you need to know about them all wrapped into one. Because the look on his face, he doesn't look sad or he's really just looks almost happy that she's getting off, hopefully. And you see her make the decision like to basically, because in that moment, she's not thinking like, I'm going to get off this and we're both going to live. She's thinking, I don't care what happens, but I still need to be with him right now, even if it means that we both don't survive.
And that happens multiple times throughout, which is why, and we don't have to talk about this at length because everyone already has, but which is why it's so stupid that people say, she should have let him get on the door. She let him die. The whole, that is, if you watch the movie, you know that that's not true. She risked her life multiple times to make sure that they could be together. And then at the end, she's going to be like, freeze to death.
Also, like, just on that note, it was not going to support them both. Don't you know anything about being in the water and how big that was? 2 full grown people were not going to get on that and it was going to stay above the water.
And people say, oh, there was room on the door. Yes, there was room,
but there's
not enough.
That doesn't
mean it wouldn't have
sunk. It's not
going to
hold them up. So idiotic. But the only thing that I do love is that every time I see that, even though people argue about it, I always think, you've seen the Keke Palmer clip?
No.
What?
Oh, I haven't.
My God. I almost want to pull it up and play it for you. It's the funniest. I'm going to right now. She's on Steve Harvey's show and she's talking about this movie because he pulled up some picture of her wearing pants that have roses and Leo's face on them. And so she's like, oh, like, don't you get it? It's like Rose and Leo because of Titanic. And then she gets into it.
Everybody in here know that she should have got up off that bed and shared it with him. Because I would have been like, come, you better get up here. I'll never get over that scene. She over there looking at him while he's freezing.
What was that scene?
The bed when they're in the water. So y'all know, scene where it's like everybody's off the boat. At this point, you know, there are people floating gone and there are people also that are using like, you know, some of the furniture from the boat to be able to stay alive on the water. Uh-huh. So they had like a little piece of something. It was like a piece of wood. I don't know. It was something that was holding her up. It was a door that was holding her up. And she over there trying to get him up there barely. And he like, you know, and he just like, I'll stay here, Rose. I'll stay here. Homeboy died holding on to it. She had to pull his hands off. It was so frozen. I'm like, girl, you ain't think to take turns? She let my brother freeze. She had him freeze to death before our very eyes. She watched him. Did y'all ever get that part? That's the cold part about it. She watched my man.
One of the other things I was thinking is that you can tell even from before they get on that door that she's not totally there.
Yes. So true.
But I do wish that they had showed them try a little bit harder just to solidify the fact that it wouldn't have worked.
Yes.
It really is hard to watch when she has to pry his frozen hand off of hers. I think that could have been left out. And then they have him sink to the bottom.
Yeah, that shot will haunt me for the rest of my life.
But also, that's not how it works.
No, it's not. But that shot is so unnecessary. It's like agony on top of pain.
Oh, wait, there is one other thing about that scene that I have in my notes that's extremely important. And I laughed out fucking loud. He says to her, he's literally you. He says to her,
I don't know about you, but I intend to write a strongly worded letter to the White Star Line about all this.
I couldn't believe it. Oh, another question that I had. There's this big back and forth between the guys who work on the ship about how at first it's just women and children and they're all in agreement and that's what's happening and they're fighting men off. Eventually, later on, some men finagle their way on. But in the beginning, it's known by everyone and no one's panicking at first.
Right.
And it's just women and children. The very first boat that we see being lowered down is like 70% men.
What?
Was that a mistake? What was that? You have to go back and watch it. I swear to you. Where are the children?
That is so true. Because even though I didn't notice that it was all men, picturing them in my head, there's like not one child on any of those boats.
And even if there are, and maybe we don't see them, the bottom line is that they're telling us it's just women and children. The boat is more than half men.
Come on, James. Of all the details you had put into this, you didn't make
Why
sure.
Why are you bothering to stress that point so many times if that's not what you're doing on the first boat? This is before men were paying and sneaking onto the boats. The other thing, the whole time it's happening, we have a full hour plus of everyone knowing that this thing is sinking. Why is nobody trying to make some type of raft? At one point, there's piles and piles of life jackets. There are deck chairs. There are sofas. There are dining tables. Why is nobody making a fucking raft?
Not enough thinking was going on, that's for sure.
Cal is running back and forth from one end of the boat to the other 50 times. What are you doing?
Him and his valet are not exactly the epitomes of good use of time. I mean, my God, we all need to be as committed to our jobs as Lovejoy is to his. I mean, Jesus Christ. What is he? It's as if the two of them have done something personally to him that he is taking his job so seriously. The boat is sinking. It's going down. People are getting onto lifeboats.
He's flashing his pistol around.
I found them. They're on the other side of the boat. It's like, bruh, get on a boat and live. Who cares? Be like Cal. I can't find him. The boat is sinking. We need to be doing something else. That sequence of them running from him is another one of my favorites. I think it's so funny when the Irish like jig music that's playing as they're like opening doors and running around, and then he's like out of breath because they've been sprinting up and down the halls, and he's like,
pretty tough for a valet, this fella. Seems more like a cop.
I think he was.
Go!
I think it's just like such a funny, light moment that they're having together, and it was so fun, and he's a maniac.
Yeah, he is a maniac, and they're so cute. It's really amazing how they experience every facet of what it takes to fall in love with someone in such a compressed period of time.
So true.
There's an attraction. There are lighthearted moments. There are deeper moments. There's exuberant joy. There's panic. There's a test of their trust for each other.
Right. I was
the
just going to say.
The list goes on and on.
I was just going to say the moment when she has to decide whether or not she trusts him about the diamond.
When she came back with that axe too, I knew what happened and I was stressed out.
I love that sequence because it just seems like there could have been a world in which the whole movie goes by and she doesn't have her moment where like she's the hero, for her to be the one that gets it going, where they really haven't done any surviving yet and she has to go upstairs and try and find somebody and then she can't. And I love when the lights first go out and she panics for a second and it's just she's frozen because she's doesn't know what to do and now she can't see and it's really setting in how terrifying the whole thing is. But then she just clicks right back and is in fight mode, trying to find something that's gonna work. And then she goes down and sees how far the water has come up. And again, she has a second where she panics. She takes off her jacket and goes headfirst in and is holding onto the pipes and axe in one hand, hanging on with the other. It's just amazing.
I also love as time goes on, she's finding herself more and more. And like when she's asking that guy for help and he's panicked, he's like out of his head and she ends up punching him. She's so great. It's also so funny when she comes back into the room with the axe and he tells her to practice. She hits the armoire and then he says, good, now try to hit it again in the same spot. And her second swing is so far off from the first that he just says, okay, that's enough practice.
He's like, honestly, we do any more practice and you're going to convince me that I'm better off just staying chained to the pipe.
Okay, it's enough practice. Come on, Rose. We can do it.
But I love that he, she's about to do it and he pauses for a second. I think he says, wait, and says,
listen, Rose, I trust you.
They're soulmates.
Yes.
In real life, they are. Maybe non-romantic, but they are soulmates. I saw a video the other day where someone had put together a few of their moments over the years, and someone commented that they've lived many lives together, and I honestly believe that.
I still dream that one day they'll find one another.
I just wish she could be like, listen, there's a reason why you're dating girls who are under 25. It's because you are emotionally stuck at the age of your biggest trauma. And I just need you to go to a little bit of therapy.
He 1000% should be the one to tell him to do that. And it'll work. He trusts her more than anybody, I believe. I don't know anything about them, but I think that that's true.
Yes.
One day, I think, I trust that they'll find one another somehow. I don't know. I have to hold hope alive in my head that one day. I have two questions sort of connected. First off, my mom and I got into a debate because I wasn't sure and she was sure and I wasn't convinced. Have Cal and Rose slept together? She was certain no, but my only thought of maybe they have is because of that conversation they have on the patio. He says,
I had hoped you would come to me last night.
I was tired.
And just like the way he says it and the implication made it seem like they have, and he was thinking like, I thought last night would have been a night that you came to be with me.
I'm conflicted. I agree with you, actually. And when he said that, I had the same thought and felt pretty certain about it. My only hesitation is because I think Cal is the kind of guy that, even though he, of course, wants to already be doing that, that he would look at her as tainted if she was willing to do that, even if it was just with him.
That is a good point.
But with all that said, I still think yes, probably.
Because of that conversation. Because he also says something like, after he flips the table, he says,
my wife can practice, if not yet by law, so you will honor me. You will honor me the way a wife is required to honor a husband. Because I will not be made out of fool.
Implying that, like, you know, we do what husband and wife do, that you're already my wife, so you better start acting like it.
I didn't take it that exact way, but even still, it was so upsetting when right after he flips the table, he leaves and her, I don't know what her
like
title
handmaiden
is,
but
her,
or something. Yeah.
That when she comes over to help her clean up, you can tell by the way she reacts, saying, oh, there was a bit of an accident. You can tell that this is behavior she's used to from him.
Yeah.
It's really horrendous.
Also, when she comes in, I love that she's like apologizing to her. She's like, and that she uses her name. It just makes me think that, like, I imagine the life that Rose had even before Titanic, where she was always, you know, closer to the staff than maybe she was supposed to be, and like doing all the things that she's not supposed to, but she felt in her heart she should. So it seemed like, just by the way she said her name and was apologizing to her, it seemed like she had a good relationship with her, which I thought was sweet.
Especially considering what a monster her mother is.
Yes. And I'm sure it was something that her mother was incredibly disapproving of, that, you know, she's close with the staff and you shouldn't be talking to them like that and that kind of thing.
Definitely.
You're not to see that boy again. Do you understand me? Rose? I forbid it. Oh, stop it, Mother. You'll give yourself a nosebleed.
The scene where he draws her, the first time I saw it, I was like, this is the hottest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
I think I still think that.
You can tell how nervous he is, but he's also trying to be professional about it. And he is very respectful. Mm-hmm. And she's so cute. I just love the whole thing. And I forgot that she left it in the safe for him to find with that note.
Do you know the little fact about that scene where in the beginning, like before she lays down, he says,
overrun the bed, the couch.
That was a real mistake that he made. It wasn't written that way. He was really nervous and said the wrong thing.
I'm going to need a minute to recover from that.
Jack, I want you to draw me like one of your French girls. Wearing this.
wearing only this.
Do you think they had a thing while they were filming? Or do you think they've never gone there?
I think they've never gone there.
I think I agree.
Boy, do I wish. It's actually not okay how invested I am in them being together. It's really something that is like left over from my 12-year-old brain. There's no reason that as a grown adult, I should be caring that much about two celebrities being together in real life. Like, it's a movie, Alexa. You need to calm down. I know that it's the most like cliche part of the whole thing, but his speech at dinner, I can't get enough. Every time I hear it, it's like I'm
so good.
It's like I'm hearing it for the first time.
Got everything I need right here with me. Got air in my lungs and a few blank sheets of paper. I mean, I love waking up in the morning not knowing what's going to happen or who I'm going to meet, where I'm going to wind up. Just the other night, I was sleeping under a bridge, and now here I am on the grandest ship in the world having champagne with you fine people. I'll take some of that. I figure life's a gift, and I don't intend on wasting it. You never know what hand you're going to get dealt next. You learn to take life as it comes at you. Oh, here you go, Cal. To make each day count.
The ones who needed to be put in their place are put there. And it's almost like that's just an added bonus. That wasn't even really his intention in sharing that, but it accomplishes it.
And I love all the little things. Like, I love when he takes a bite of his roll and he throws his matches to Cal. Tiny little interruptions so that it's not just like he's monologuing to the table. It felt conversational while still being this speech that he's giving, essentially.
And it also says that if you're going to try to make me feel uncomfortable and out of place, I'm going to rise to that occasion. That's why he was such a perfect match for her, because he didn't let any of that stuff intimidate him.
Because, you know, even though his position in life was lower than hers, that he was happier and living more than she was.
Definitely.
She was not present in half of her life. And he was like this epitome of living for each moment.
The fact that he knows at the end that he is not going to make it, and he spends his last moments comforting her, making sure that she's okay, not just in that moment, but that her mindset, like he's setting her up. It's like the stories we tell ourselves. He's giving her the story to carry her all the way through life,
yeah,
without him and without them together. That is such a beautifully generous thing.
And he's in the short term giving her something that she needs to look onwards for to get, because he knows that he's not going to make it, and she is going to have to make it without him, and that she's going to have to take it that final mile. And he's giving her a short term burst of like, you need to get out just so that you can do these things.
Don't you do that. Don't you say your goodbyes. Not yet. Do you understand me?
I'm so cold.
Listen, Rose. You're gonna get out of here. You're gonna go on. And you're gonna make lots of babies. And you're gonna watch them grow. You're gonna die an old lady, warm in her bed. Not here. Not this night. Not like this. Do you understand me? Winning that ticket, Rose, was the best thing that ever happened to me. It brought me to you. You must promise me that you'll survive. That you won't give up. No matter what happens.
So I realized I never asked my second question. It was regarding, so the first was, did Cal and Rose sleep together? And then the second thing is like, does Cal love her?
No.
So then, okay. So I didn't think so. But then what is it that when he sees her again after she's gone to get Jack and they're back up on deck and before she gets on the boat, he like puts his coat around her, and it's like he's having this moment of wanting to protect her.
He loves her in the way
that she's like a prize
that you love,
like a trophy.
Yes.
I see.
So he's protecting his precious investment.
So it's not feeling. It's like pride.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to feel like he's lost.
He doesn't want to lose her. He does want to protect her, but it's not because he genuinely knows her or loves who she is. He loves what she represents and what she can provide for him in terms of having a beautiful, elegant, obedient, subservient wife.
So then the moment when he loses it and takes Lovejoy's gun, which actually, by the way, is an amazing shot. It's so cool the way Cameron framed it and like the slow motion of him grabbing the gun and then like it's spinning around to them and her back is to him, but Jack can see and then he moves them out of the way. It's a great sequence. But so that is just driven by like, if I can't have her, no one can.
Yes.
Okay. Another one of my favorite quotes, comes from one of my, I think probably my favorite character besides the two of them, Mr. Andrews.
He's so cute.
He's so cute. I'm obsessed with Mr. Andrews, but also he has the best line of the whole thing. When the Titanic has hit the iceberg and he's got the blueprints and he's telling them, he's taking them through how it's filled.
Water, 14 feet above the keel in 10 minutes. In the 4P, in all three holds, and in boiler room 6.
That's right, sir.
When can we get underway, damn it?
That's 5 compartments. She can stay afloat with the first 4 compartments breached, but not 5. Not 5. As she goes down by the head, the water will spill over the tops of the bulkheads at E deck from one to the next, back and back. There's no stopping it.
The pumps, if we open the
doors... The pumps buy you time. But minutes only. From this moment, no matter what we do, Titanic will founder.
And the engineer guy is like,
but this ship can't sink.
She's made of iron, sir. I assure you, she can.
And she will. It is a mathematical certainty.
I just gave myself a chill even just saying it. It's the best line in the whole thing. It's so good. And then what's so crazy is when he's talking about how it'll be in an hour, like an hour, maybe two. Every time I hear it, I think it's insane that it's that quick. An hour is barely any time. It's actually amazing that they get as much done as they do in an hour and a half.
Yeah. And that motherfucker who convinced the captain to go as fast as they could possibly go, that he sneaks onto a boat and survives.
The worst people make it out. Him, Cal, her stupid mother. I swear, all the people that you wanted to see not make it, make it. And when Mr. Murdoch gives the order to lower it as he's looking at him and he refuses to look at him.
I did love when Cal gets his money thrown back in his face.
Yes.
But he still finds a way to use someone else and get his way.
You know what line I don't like? And it bothers me every time. When Cal and Jack are convincing Rose to get on the boat, and the way they do that is Cal saying that like he has an arrangement and the two of them will get on, like blah, blah, blah. It's very clear that the look that Jack gives him is like he knows that he's lying. But then they lower Rose, and now Cal and Jack are talking, and Jack says,
there's no...
Easy.
There's no arrangement, is there?
No way.
I just think it's like such a dumb line. I don't like it because the way he asks it makes it seem like he didn't realize there wasn't an arrangement, even though it's so clear that he knew there wasn't one. I don't know. It sticks out to me. It's such a stupid moment, but it really bothers me because it just seems like it did not belong there at all.
Well, you more than anything hate telling rather than showing, and that's what that is.
But like he knew
it was insulting to the audience.
Yes, it was clear. Like the look he gives is crystal clear. When he looks at Cal, he's like, oh, OK, I see what we're doing here. We're lying. And what's also dumb and makes no sense is before he says there's no arrangement.
That's what I was just about to
Cal's
say.
Cal's like, you're a good liar. And he's like, not half as good as you. So like, what's he asking for then? It's really stupid. Another line I love is when they're inside on the stairs. Jack's not there. He's still in the basement. And Rose sees Mr. Andrews on the stairs. And she's, it's like a little corny, but she delivers it so well when she says,
I saw the iceberg and I see it in your eyes. Please tell me the truth.
She's so beautiful in that scene, in that pink coat with the black embroidery.
And I actually love Cal's reaction too, because I think Billy Zane is like not a great actor in this, in my opinion. I think some of his line delivery is really awful, but that moment,
I would say the same for Leo, surprisingly.
You're right. But his reaction to Mr. Andrews telling them, actually, I do like, he really is shocked and believing him, because, you know, Cal could be like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, you don't know what you're saying. He could be in denial like a bunch of the other rich people, but he knows he's for real. And he's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And the look on his face is real.
I didn't realize when I was a kid watching this or a teenager, that Guggenheim goes down with the ship. And it made me wonder how many other known people did.
Well, the couple that is in their bed, those are the Macy's.
Oh, shit. And do you think that was because, like, she could have gotten on a boat, but she didn't want to leave him?
Yeah.
The mom tucking her kids in was fucking gut-wrenching. It's so sick how they had the third-class passengers locked behind that gate for so long.
Yeah. And one thing I will say is that that's not accurate. A lot of the things that he included are historically accurate. That isn't. The gates were not.
Oh, good.
We're
okay.
Not on board, which does make me feel better. It's just for dramatic. It is actually all of my moments of actual panic that I get watching it come around those gates, because that I can't imagine what that would feel like.
Because it's not your decision at that point.
Yeah, it's sick. Every scene that's by those gates is anxiety inducing. I love when he flips out and screams and then they bust it down with the bench. Yeah. That's fucking great.
Open the gate right now.
Go back down the main stairwell like I told you.
God damn it, son of a bitch!
The way they killed his friend was fucked up.
Which one? Tommy or Fabrizio? Yeah.
What a way to go. Come on. Yeah. Give that man a little bit more respect.
Yeah. So true. At least he gets a climactic moment and not something like lame.
Yeah.
Tommy Ryan also gets a death also.
Is that
he's the one that's shot? Yeah.
I hate the line where he's like,
15,000 Irishmen built this ship. Solid as a rock. Big Irish hand.
I low-key hate Tommy Ryan. I think his character is so annoying. And he's just like, he already had a friend. Like, Fabrizio was enough. We don't need, like, another friend. Another line that gets me is, just because I can't believe he has the gall to say it, when Cal and Rose and her mom are first by the lifeboats and they've just locked up Jack with Lovejoy, and Cal says that comment about,
you know, it's a pity I didn't keep that drawing. It'll be worth a lot more by morning.
Women and children on the front page.
You unimaginable bastard.
Is he saying that because Jack's going to be dead?
Yeah.
What a scumbag.
And like, it's the moment that pushes her over the edge, because what she says is, you unimaginable bastard. And I'm like, yes, Rose, get it in.
When she says to him,
I'd rather be his whore than your wife.
I'm like,
oh God, it's so good.
So you looked up a bunch of trivia, right?
Yeah. So the first couple things I wrote down were all about Cameron's insane dedication to this. He spent more time on the Titanic than the passengers did. He's dove down 12 times. It says each trip sometimes was like hours and hours long that he was diving and obsessed with the Titanic.
Normally, I would respect that level of dedication, but something about him rubs me the wrong way. I don't know if it's just
because of lately, but
I don't know.
I think that his level of love for the ship, though, is a lot of what makes the movie.
But is that what's driving it, or is it his ego and wanting it to be the biggest and baddest and best?
I don't think so. I don't think so. Not for now. Yes. Now, with Avatar and everything that's happening now, for sure, that's all ego-driven. But this, I do really think he was just, for some reason, very, very invested in making this as good as it possibly could be.
Okay, I can appreciate that.
So all of the decor and everything that was reconstructed was hours and hours of research and was supervised by White Star Line people that were like experts on what things would actually look like. And in fact, the company that made the carpets on the actual Titanic is who made the carpets that are in the movie.
That's very cool.
There were 150 people that were assigned actual characters of actual people that were on the Titanic, and that supposedly they had to sit through like a seminar that gave them like a history on the ship, and they had to like know all this stuff and background about each person they were really playing, even though they didn't have any lines.
That makes me want to cry.
The grand staircase was built and functioned like a real staircase. And in fact, when we see it flooding at the end, they only had one take to get that because they destroyed the set by dumping 90,000 gallons of water through the staircase. Like, none of that is fake. They did not fake that. They had one chance to do it because they had a real staircase that they were finished using, and we're going to make that shot as real as it possibly could be. The chef we see at he's one of the last people to go in the water with Jack and Rose on the back of the boat. He has the flask.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any lines. He's a real person. He was the real chef on the Titanic, and he lived. And they think that the reason he lived is because he was so intoxicated that he was not experiencing the shock and all of the things like fully, because he was so intoxicated from drinking as the ship was going down. The sunset that is behind them when they film the I'm flying scene is real, even though a lot of other things were CGI. Like, James waited for a perfect day where the lighting was exactly what he wanted, and they filmed that like for real.
That's very cute and cool.
So now to some alternate casting. So first is one that's not one of the two of them, which is Cora. His best girl, Cora, was almost played by Lindsay Lohan.
Oh my God.
She was actually given the role, but then Cameron cut her because he thought that he had too many redheads, which is a bizarre reason to cut her. But he thought that, you know, Kate having red hair and her mother and Molly Brown all having red hair, that he wanted an extra girl that was not redheaded. So now to Jack and Rose. So who do you want to hear first?
Jack.
So Jack is the only one, even though I would like rather die than see anybody but Leo do it. The alternates, I can see a couple. The Roses, I think, are worse. Like, I can't imagine a single one of them doing it instead of Kate. But for Jack, so River Phoenix was one of the front runners, but he passed away before they started filming. But he was one of the very front people. They offered it to Matthew McConaughey and he turned it down.
Thank God.
They also offered it to Johnny Depp, who also turned it down.
Also, thank God.
Paul Rudd was up for it. Christian Bale, Billy Crudup, Tom Cruise, and Ethan Hawke.
The only one I even would consider is Christian Bale. You know, I love, we both love Ethan Hawke, but I don't think he would have been right.
Could he have done it?
Yes.
That's him. Christian Bale and Ethan Hawke are the only two that I could see doing it. It wouldn't be nearly what it is, but I can like picture a version that they're in. The Roses are wild. They considered essentially any woman that was big in Hollywood. They have Reese Witherspoon on the list, Jennifer Aniston, Drew Barrymore, Uma Thurman, Winona Ryder, Claire Danes, Nicole Kidman, and Gwyneth Paltrow were both offered it and turned it down.
Thank God.
I would have hated every version of every single one of these. It would have been so bad and so different.
Imagine if this would have been Matthew McConaughey
and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Jennifer Aniston is the most unhinged.
Unhinged. Honestly, Drew Barrymore is really unhinged too. And I am I'm like her number one fan, but truly I can't think of a role she'd be worse for.
I maybe have to disagree.
Really?
In fact, I think she's the only one who, if I had to choose one person out of that group, I think she's who I would have chosen.
I can't picture a single one of them doing it.
I can picture Reese doing it. I do think she would have been great. but I don't think it would have been what it is. They were meant for it. But I do think Christian Bale would have been really good.
He would have been really good.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but he is a better actor than Leo.
Whoa.
I think Leo is one of the best of all time. I think Christian is as good or better. I think he might be better. And he was the right amount and the right kind of handsome.
Yes.
And he can play that
like boyish rebel, like,
yeah,
can't tie him down kind of a energy.
Yeah.
You know which scene I really don't like that you're supposed to, that I don't, is when he grabs her and pulls her into that big empty room with the sun like coming in through the windows. I don't like that scene at all. I think
Why?
Both of their acting is like not very good. And what he says, it's too on the, it might be a similar problem to what I was just talking about with the lying thing, because it's like too on the nose. It's, we got like what's going on between them, and him being like, that fire that I love about you, Rose, like, I just, it's too much. It just doesn't work for me. Though it does have one of the funniest lines in it that I, my friends and I always used to quote, when she's like,
I'm engaged. I'm marrying Cal. I love Cal.
The quartet gets me every time. That's usually like, if I'm watching it, like really watching it, that's usually when I start crying. Like when they decide that they're done and then the violinist starts playing by himself and then the three of them come back. And then when they're really done and he says,
gentlemen, it has been a privilege playing with you tonight.
Am I remembering correctly that at one point somebody says it's music to drown to?
Yes, Tommy Ryan says they finally have like broken free from the gates that they've all had to go through. And he gets on deck and he says,
music to drown by. Now I know I'm in first class.
Oh, God. You know when Leo is at his absolute hottest?
I hope you say the same moment that I think of, because I think there's only one right answer. When is it?
It's, I don't think it's going to be the one you're talking about, although I agree with the one you're probably thinking of. Right after he finishes dancing with Cora and he walks up to her and leans down a little bit and says,
come on. Come on. Come with me.
It's the exact way that in any romance or rom-com novel where the guy commands you to do something, but with just the right energy to where you want to be like,
oh yeah, my God, it's so right.
Please tell me to do whatever it is you want me to do. The way he delivers it is exactly that. Were you going to say...
When they meet, I think when he's smoking that cigarette out at the back of the boat is when he says she looks like an indoor girl. And raises his eyebrows
after he saves her when he asks the guy for a cigarette,
and then he takes two.
Yeah, and he puts one behind his ear, and then he's playing with the other one in his mouth. And then, of course, when he's in the tux, when he turns around at the top of the stairs and says, "You want to go to a real party?" Fuck!
Oh my God!
So you want to go to a real party?
One of his funniest lines is when they're it's towards the end, they're going towards the back of the ship, and that guy in front of them is like walking really slowly up the stairs, and he's like,
the valley of the shadow of death.
I want to walk a little faster through that valley there.
When they're walking on the deck of the ship the day after he saves her, before they go to dinner, and she's in that yellow dress, and they're talking about his art and what his life has been, and there's just something, it's like, it feels like the first real day of spring, the first day that it starts to get warm, but it's like crisp out because it's not humid yet, and it's sunny and everything's starting to turn green. That's exactly what it feels like.
It feels also like you said before, like two people getting to know each other as they're falling in love. It felt like a first date. I love the shot that makes Rose decide to meet him again when she sees the little girl folding her napkin and like with her mother, and she has the gloves on and she sees what her whole life has been up until now. I think it's such a poignant way of expressing what's going through her head as she's deciding whether or not to go with him again.
I changed my mind.
Give me your hand.
I could watch her saying,
"Put your hands on me, Jack.
Please."
Forever and ever and ever and ever.
Honestly, I think I blocked it out. It's too much.
It's honestly way too much.
Oh, actually, you know what? That's another reason why I think you're right about her having slept with Cal. I think there would have been something in there about him asking, is this your first time or something?
Oh, yeah. I think she has. I think she slept with Cal, as horrible as that thought is.
I wish that you had been old enough to experience the absolute worldwide mania over this entire thing. But especially, there were a few select parts, and the shot where we're looking at the outside of the car that's all fogged up and her hand hits the window and slides down was like huge.
You know, I don't have any idea what it must have been like. I really don't. I've thought about it and like I've seen, you know, interviews and red carpets and all that kind of, but I truly can't imagine, because I believe, and I really mean this, this is not an exaggeration, I don't believe that there has been a movie as big as this or as important and as well done before or since. I think this is like the greatest movie maybe ever made.
Holy shit. I wonder if we can look up how long it was in theaters, because I think it was over a year.
Well, 10 months, 11 months.
Okay, yeah.
It came out in December and it left the following October. I think I read that it was the first movie to come out on VHS while it was still playing in the theater.
That is wild.
I think what's making me want to watch it so many times is because I'm desperate for the part where everything is beautiful and they're together to be longer. So like the moment it's over, I want to start. It's what we were talking about with Brokeback. The moment it's over, I'm like, I can't live in a world where he's dead and they're not together. Like, I need to go back to when I know they're falling in love and everything is fine.
But we do get another thing I forgot about, that final scene where we see that she is in bed, warm and cozy, like he wanted for her and like he had her promise. And then we see the Titanic come back to life, which is so amazing. And then the guy opens the door just like in the beginning, and she walks in and all the people who died on the ship are there waiting for her. And then he's at the top of the steps and he turns around. Oh my God. He's been waiting for her this whole time.
It's a perfect ending scene. The final scene is one of the best of the whole entire thing. One thing that I never, maybe this is something obvious that I was supposed to get on the very first time, but I didn't get it until I saw it in the theater. The pictures that she has, older Rose, that she brings with her. I always knew that the ones they show are things that they discussed doing, that she did like without him. But I never really understood that her wanting to have them is this need to be close and realize that like the life that she's lived was for both of them.
Man. And you can see it on her face when they're arriving to New York and she's looking at the Statue of Liberty. You can see her telling herself, this is it. This is the beginning of your new life without them and without him. And now it's up to you to carry this forward.
To make it count.
To making it count.
To making it count.